Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The tip of the tongue, the roof of the mouth.
Wait.
The lips and the teeth.
It's never. That's not how it goes.
Gretchen the tittle-tattle prattled on about a little metal bottle. She spit a bit of spaddle.
Tip of the tongue, roof of the mouth.
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
The skeleton frequently suffered from bellyache.
The tip of the tongue, the roof of the mouth, lips, and the teeth.
Is that
over
something?
The stomach and through the lips? Through the gums. Okay, stomach, here we go.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and intern, which makes me a doctor, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Jantz, Rabies nurse.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Do I need to be liked? Absolutely not. I like to be liked. I enjoy being liked. I have to be liked. But it's not like this compulsive need to be liked. Like my need to be praised.
I do relate to that, actually.
I think everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we're going to do an episode. We're going to follow that up with a little lightning round draft for our conference room.
Mini
draft. Really excited about that. And we'll end with some listener trivia as usual.
Wait, what's our mini draft about?
We'll be drafting single episode characters.
Nice.
We each get three. So you at home, you can start thinking about your favorite single episode characters. Not allowed to pick anyone who's been in more than one. This week we're going to talk about an episode that we talk about a lot on this show, but we've never done an episode on it. And I'm so excited. Fun Run. Season four.
Episode one. What a fun one, guys. What a fun one this is going to be.
What a fun one. Every time, if you listen to us often, you know that anytime we say, oh, yeah, that's a fun one, talking about some joke or some episode, we say, fun one, season four, episode one. Written by Greg Daniels, directed by Greg Daniels. Original air date, September 27th.
Starring Greg Daniels, produced by Greg Daniels. Concept. By Greg Daniels.
The off-Broadway sensation.
Yeah. Original air date was September 27th, 2007.
By Greg Daniels.
This is actually, you know, we always say season four, episode one. It's actually season four, episode one and two.
That's
true. Two-part episode. Before we get into it, I just want to start with, do you guys remember watching this episode when it came out? I do.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. We had a request for this on one of our voicemails, I think a couple weeks ago. And I think a couple people have asked us about it. And, you know, we're quick with the turnaround time. If you give us a good idea, we will jump on it. but yes, I absolutely remember watching this episode. I think there was a ton of excitement with friends about this episode. I remember talking to people a lot about it afterwards, about where the show was going. The show had really, really picked up in terms of its popularity, and it felt like it was something that you could really talk about with people in terms of appointment viewing for network TV, which doesn't exist in the same way anymore. But yes, I absolutely remember. How about you guys?
Yeah, I remember in high school, everyone going over to, I'm almost certain this is right, Jake Bartline's house to watch this episode. And I'm pretty sure, Edwin, you were there. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that, okay. But it wouldn't surprise me if I was there. I remember talking to a lot of people about it afterwards. I think we had a Facebook note.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
This one was like my sophomore year of college. Was just starting because this, you know, new season of The Office would start in September. So this is right when school got back. So this was the year after, like, I'd made all these friends as a freshman. And then we started, this is right when my friend got a new house. And I've talked about this before. We all went to his house every Thursday to watch the show. And this was like the first time that, like, we came back for this next school year. We were all friends. We hadn't seen each other all summer. Yeah. And this was our first big party. And this was the first scene was like Michael eating this bowl of cereal. And we were all just grinning ear to ear, so excited to watch this episode. And it just paid off in every way.
Yeah. I mean, I think like by this time, 2007, like everyone kind of knew, I mean, the show was a hit, like everyone knew about it. And so like people were getting together on Thursday nights to watch The Office and usually 30 Rock after that.
maybe My Name is Earl.
Maybe My Name so is Earl kind. Just as a warm up, as an appetizer.
My buddy Winslow was always pushing that show on us. And he's like, you guys should come over early. Then we can watch My Name is Earl. And it's like, it's okay. Not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Let's dive into this episode, though. We've got some big plot lines here. I mean, I think the number one theme of this episode is PB&J, man. This is Pam, Beasley, and Jim finally get together.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking to myself while I was rewatching this to prepare for today that this would be a great episode to drop someone in if they've never seen an episode of The Office before. Just because it creates such a clean slate, there's such a clean break feeling for it. Starts with Michael eating the bowl of cereal. You see Jan, and then he outlines on the drive-in, Andy and Dwight are rocking the sales team. Jan's at home, so he kind of sets the table. And then Jim and Pam getting together is an easy way to get into their relationship. Ironically, you would miss the heart and soul of the show itself and their relationship, but it did feel like a good starting point. That was such one of the things that I think. Part of the reason we had so much anticipation for this and remember that so clearly is because it was like a cliffhanger between Jim and Pam, and to see them finally be together on the show was such a big deal.
And it's the only episode, like, to back up your point, Edwin, it's the only episode where, like, we get a portion of the episode where Jim and Pam are just cute and flirting in the office and each single, and we also get a portion of the episode where they're a couple. So you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of revealed halfway through that they're actually together. But because at first...
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I do love Kevin, so astute.
Yeah.
He will not give up this whole episode.
I know. And Oscar, too, is like, you know, they have seemed like exceedingly happy. Could be for a number of reasons. We don't know.
There is no evidence of intimacy.
Yeah. Subtle.
Yeah. But yeah, then we learn, you know, again,
why
we
does get, this always happen to me?
Again, we get, the camera team, getting involved in the show and, following Pam and Jim as they leave the office one day and then confront them about it and play the video back for them.
Aggressive moves by the camera team. I mean, they're really going outside of their job description.
No kidding. I think
pursuing
broke...
interview subjects out in public.
Are they breaking their ethical documentarian code? I don't know.
It's been broken so many times over the course of this show.
I was surprised that the documentary crew went into the break room and stopped them to say, hey, look at this video that we have of you. And confronts them with that TV on wheels that you'd see in a classroom. Just show them that video of themselves getting into a car. It seems like
journalistically, this is a mess.
It was just an instance where the documentary crew really stepped in. When just episodes earlier, they let Andy float away in the lake.
I know. They will do anything for Jim and Pam. They will do anything for him. Yeah. But they will do nothing for anyone else.
Hey, I want to let you know that Dwight is eating the candy bar that Angela bought. Yeah. We don't want to let you know that Andy has floated away in a lake, but we will show you when the lights go out and he calls for help. We did get a question about the documentary crew and the role in the show, and that's something we've been wanting to do for a while. So I think be on the lookout for that. I think we should
do the documentary crew as a character.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that? Is that Kevin suffocating in a car? Nah, he's fine. But
that's
give
so...
Pam any intel she needs on anything.
Yeah. Oh God. Jim and Pam finally together. We find out that they're together. Pam admits it, and then we just kind of get a cute episode with them for the rest of the episode. We just get to chill with them, which is kind of nice.
Well.
I think I think we all earned that, you know, for what they put us through.
Yeah, great job, everybody. Yeah,
this whole season. I mean, it kicks off. That's the tenor of the season for Jim and Pam. Really, is like things are good and they're just like dating and nothing else. And it's great. That's why season four is my favorite. Well, close.
In the book by Andy Green, about The Office, that sort of oral history, not the same as Brian Baumgartner's podcast, which is also great, but you should check out Andy Green's book. There is a chapter on season four, and like we had alluded to, there you go, Alex is pulling it out
right now.
There's a lot of context that they helped set up around season four. I really wish this book was out when we did our season four episode last year. But anyway, they talk about it being a big hit, and because the rest of NBC's fall lineup sort of faltered and ended up getting canceled, they wanted as much as The Office as they could get. So they ordered like 4 or 5 hour longs to start the season. Mm. And you can tell watching Fun Run that the writers describe it as making it really difficult because they knew that eventually the episodes would get cut in half for syndication. So that was like what they were expecting. So they almost had to write episodes as if they were two-parters airing at a one block time frame. So I think all of that is to say that when Jim and Pam get together, there's that scene at the end where they're getting into the car and Kevin says, well, if they're not together now, I guess they never will be. And that feels like a very natural endpoint for an episode. But of course, we still have the rest of the Fun Run episode. So they go together in that way. And one thing I want to pose to you guys is the writers talk about how this was a big deal in bringing them together. Are you going to lose that romantic tension or that interest in the show? Is it better as a viewer to want them to get together and actually see them get together? Mm. Ricky Gervais comes out and says in that book, I would have kept them apart until the very end. Two people in love in an office, fucking nauseating. Which is such a funny take, especially when you get to the PDA episode with Michael and Holly in season 7.
Yeah.
But I guess just to pose to you guys, like, do you think this was the right move to bring them together at this time? There's still 5 seasons of the show.
Well, I mean, I certainly enjoy them being together in this episode when it first happened, when I rewatch it. But you guys know me. I love the bleaker tone of early Office. And if they had kept them apart until the bitter end, I would have been just as happy with the show for sure.
At some point it was starting to feel unrealistic. And I remember watching this with my friends live. And at the beginning, they like trick you a little bit, right? Because Pam's like, oh, you know, we went on a couple dates. Like, she owns up to going on a couple dates. And now they're just friends again. And all of us were a little eye-rolly. And I remember in the moment, just being like, come on. Like,
yeah,
they've already gone through this arc like twice. Like, come on. Like, they can't keep doing that. And you had a feeling like they're obviously together. And so it was... After fourth season, it's like, let's just get them together and let's move on. And that's what any show of this length, I mean, they're going to get together. They're going to start a family. That's just how this sort of thing goes. For Ricky Gervais, like, that works in the BBC Office, the 2 seasons, 12 episodes, and then the specials. And they do leave it until the very, very, very end, like the last shot of the last special for them to actually be together. Mm-hmm. And I do agree that does hit like this catharsis of Tim and Don finally getting together that you only get briefly here in the US office because that moves on into their relationship. So I see what he's saying, but it was unrealistic for them to not be together at this point.
Yeah, knowing what we know about the show now, is it would be almost impossible to have it be a satisfying relationship to watch as a viewer if they waited another 5 seasons after this for them to get together. 9 seasons of TV before they get together. And the writers in the book make a good point that in real life, people get together. Like, you don't long after someone for 10 years. And there's still a lot to explore together. I think they made an interesting point of how they become a little duo. Like the two of them helping Michael, the two of them helping Dwight, and they kind of team up in a way that's kind of fun and a little different from the timber of their sort of episodes earlier in the show. I think it's just a fun thing to think about whether or not you could bring it together. Like, how could you conceivably bring them, you know, keep them apart again?
It would not have been a fun run.
Oh, twist. Jim is dating Roy.
Actually, I'm interested in that
season. You're on to something
everything would feel totally ridiculous like that. Yeah.
Well, I do. And Anthony Farrell, another one of the writers in the Andy Green's book, talks about how, like, when they made the decision to say they're together, it unlocked a lot of other things they could do with the characters. And it's in some ways, because now you have Jim and Pam on the same team, and now you can have Pam and Michael stuff going on. You can have Jim and Pam, Jim and Dwight. They can kind of go their separate ways without having to always pull the gravity back of Jim and Pam's relationship. Now it lets them go do other things with other people.
It also really sets up, like, the relationship between Dwight and Angela is such a contrast to this, because they have been together, and now Dwight and Angela struggle through this episode and through the rest of season 4 in comparison to Jim and Pam's relative harmony. So it gives you a different look or a different point of comparison.
And maybe that's a good segue into another plot line in this episode.
That was a little late.
Dwight kills Angela's cat.
This is a huge plot point, like
huge,
way bigger than you remember sometimes.
As a recently new cat owner, I gotta say, this hits different.
Warning,
this is really
warning,
messed up.
Warning.
That is messed up.
Yeah.
Even though Angela has a lot of cats in this.
Have you begun stocking your freezer with bags of French fries just in a case of emergency?
Just to know what happened. You gotta lay some traps.
It was already packed full of French fries. Don't worry.
So obviously the Jim and Pam storyline is settled as far as what the will they won't they in this episode. We also get a very brief part of this episode when Dwight and Angela have a little talk outside of the warehouse door early on in the episode when they're sort of plotting and it's kind of this really nice where they're both plotting together and they're feeding off each other's energies and it's like, oh right, like Dwight and Angela are also just dating now and doing well and like clicking with each other and they
still
really feel
secret.
Like a team.
Yeah.
And then they rip it apart pretty fast in this episode. And
Dwight does. Or Sprinkles does.
Sprinkles
rips apart
the bag of their relationship. Yeah. And
their relationship is the bag of fries.
Yeah. And that early conversation is just, I don't know why. It just made me smile watching it.
It does.
Like, and then what we have is this issue in their relationship, which is Dwight is at his most like practical in this episode. He's at his most ruthlessly unemotional farmer sensibilities, and he brings it up time and again in this episode. And I think it's really funny, but I do like that moment between them before it breaks.
I agree. There's so much chemistry there. It really is palpable. The way they sort of smile after the other sentences and the way they pick up on. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to go. Yeah. I have to visit the Alky.
Probably did it for Workman's Comp. I wouldn't put it past her. They just agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like just making this eye contact and just smiling into each other's eyes. It's like,
it's great.
I will say that the description of Angela about how to administer the medicine to.
That's an all-time like big trivia round at the end of a trivia night. Would be like, how exactly do you take care of Sprinkles? Yeah.
Do you know it, Edwin?
Okay. Well, having just watched this episode, I can think of a couple of things. There's like an omega fatty acids thing that you got to mix into her food.
No, in her kidney medicine.
Okay. In her kidney I'm going to get a lot of the details wrong, but some of the gist of it. Yeah. You got a cream that you have to apply at the base of her tail for this fungus. So you have to lift up her tail and then you have to put the bowl right in front of her because she has cataracts.
cat Arax.
She gets an ACE inhibitor with her meal. I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It inhibits aces.
Oh, right.
Mm.
Bad for poker players. The cream and the diabetes shot. Of course, roll the insulin in your hand. Don't shake it. That's another one. But we see Dwight's face processing what's going on and realizing, like, okay, this is where Angela and I do have nothing in common. Like, even though we both are caretakers of animals, we have two very different viewpoints mm-hmm. on how you do that.
Yeah, it sets up that the big tension throughout the whole rest of the season with them, and then she eventually turns to Andy as almost like a revenge dating sort of thing, and then almost sort of settles for him. But just the idea mm-hmm. that Dwight is fighting to win her back is such a different thing for Dwight.
And like, that's Angela's integrity is like doubled down as like, she's not like, oh, I love cats. I have a lot of cats. Ha ha ha. She's like, no, like I fucking ride for cats and they are my life. And if you mess with them, like, we're going to have a serious problem. Like, she's not, she really doubles down and takes it to a whole nother level right here.
Don't F with cats.
Right. Which then, you know, ends in them watching her acting like a cat with her cats. She's on a whole nother level of existence here.
Yeah.
I will say too, in this episode, we see Dwight is at this point of brutality where obviously he puts sprinkles in the freezer. He goes to visit Meredith. Michael has him go visit Meredith and he looks right at her and he says, blink once if you want me to pull the plug or if you don't want me to pull the plug. And Meredith just says back to him, don't pull any plugs.
No.
And then you compare that with what the Dwight Angela relationship is later in the season with money, where he's pining in the night and, you know, wait, most confident it feels like at the beginning of season four in this episode.
I love also too that like this mystery kind of unfolds, or at least for Angela it does. She's trying to figure out what happened, and we even have that moment where she's talking to Pam about, you know, did Roy ever kill one of your cats? I'm more of a dog person. And I love Angela's double eye roll there.
She's so fed up with Pam.
But I also love when they're in the actual fun run and Dwight reveals that he did, in fact, kill Sprinkles. And then Angela hits Dwight. And then there's like some onlookers and because he's like, hey, ow. And then people look and they're just like, it's okay, it's nothing. And Dwight goes, I'm robbing her. It's fine.
It is the way Dwight compares Angela's pet ownership to his own is pretty funny. And he just, how he's like, while they're in the conference room, and he's just like, well, they don't provide milk or wool or meat. Like, that's the end of the road there for Dwight. He's like, cats are useless. I don't care. It's just a cat.
Yeah.
And that's the main obstacle in Dwight and Angela's relationship for a long time. And it's kind of funny that it happens this way.
Big time.
That essentially is from Angela just asking Dwight for a favor because she's going to go visit Meredith. Is that? No. Why does she ask him to do that?
He really blew it.
So Pam asks Angela to organize them going to go see Dwight. And she says, I can't because I have to go get Sprinkle my medicine.
Or Meredith. Yeah.
Meredith. Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. Pam says, Angela, you're head of the party planning committee. I shouldn't even be doing this. So that's why Dwight has to step in and deliver the medicine.
Wow. So it's all Pam and Michael's fault. That's what's going on here.
We should talk about Michael.
We should talk about
in this episode.
We should talk about Michael and how Michael hits Meredith with his car is a big part of this episode.
That's, I can't believe we haven't even mentioned
we
it.
We haven't even mentioned it. Man, this is a great Michael Scott episode. He is in so many ways at his very worst, starting with hitting one of his employees with his car.
The amount of mental and linguistic gymnastics that Michael goes through in this episode is absolutely
Simone Biles-esque performance Michael here.
Well, everyone inside the car was fine, Stanley. There's just,
Mm-hmm. the connection of like, oh, like there's a few times throughout the show when Michael is like kind of saved by the bell by something else, or at least that's how he sees it. And that this rabies issue is the perfect cover for what he did.
The way that he looks up after Dwight explains that it's a good thing she got in because she has rabies, the way that he looks up and realizes that in his mind, he's now saved her life.
Yeah. He's too lucky.
There's so many things about Michael. I feel bad for him of like, he really thinks that he holds the weight of the world on his shoulders.
And yeah.
He's responsible for everybody's well-being, and like it's kind of tragic how important he thinks he is, but time and again he's always taking credit or all the blame in his own head.
I mean, there's that moment where he's sitting on the ground at the end of this episode. Symphonies are dying. Like he's lamenting all these things in the world that he can't change, as if it was on him to do all these things. There are Braveheart, better
man.
People. Yeah,
as Braveheart. It's hard to go out and be you every day.
Yeah. What does he say? He's like, there are people all over the world who have all sorts of problems and afflictions and diseases. They're deformed and they're abnormal and they're illiterate and ugly. Symphonies don't have any money. Public TV is bust. I can't do anything about it. I can't. You know, there's just one of me, and there's 1,000 of them, and rabies wins.
And then Jim is just like, wow, you are a downer.
Yes. And Pam says, I'm still having a nice day.
I got this lamp, $8. It's a good deal.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I mean, I love to, if we go back, like, Michael announcing to everybody because he has to tell them all he hit Meredith with his car. He says that the doctors did everything they could to save her life and she's gonna be okay.
I know. Shades of the doctor in Arrested Development.
I was gonna say that's such a comedy cliche to have the doctor say something misleading and then pull it out, like change it at the end. It's kind of like when Andy talks about Dwight having a massive stroke of good fortune and getting the job in Florida.
Yeah.
Like I love that. But in this moment, they only hit it once. Like Michael just does he only says it once to try to spare himself or to just maximize the drama because he knows everyone's listening to him.
Yeah. but yeah, just the way too, he's like, you know, because thankfully I was there.
Like, I know, and everyone's like, okay.
Did we see who was driving?
Jim has that great talking head of like, Michael came in complaining of a speed bump on the highway once. Wonder who he killed there.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder too if Michael hitting Meredith and then proceeding to drive her to the hospital is a foreshadowing for Michael trying to take her to rehab. He believes in his own power to save lives.
He really, really believes in that. I believe Kate Flannery did this take a few times, right? Many times.
It really is her, isn't it?
Yeah, she did her own stunts here.
Crazy. She's a badass.
I watched it pretty closely because the shots on Michael's face the whole time going in, and Michael's, I mean, he's obviously slows down, but it's very well coordinated. It's a very well done stunt in terms of, you know, on the scale of the Office stunts. It's very well done.
I mean, it's
number one is the guy jumping off the boat in Booze Cruise. That's the number one Office stunt. This is probably number two.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Maybe number three is Andy doing the gainer off the box truck.
Gainer. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I think it's like not only is it a impressive stunt, it's great physical comedy. The way that she flops perfectly onto the windshield.
She kind of has
the timing is perfect. Yeah.
It's exactly how Michael would be hit by a car, too.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when they drive the car in the lake and the way Michael freezes up.
He just freezes up.
Michael goes through so much in this. I love when he goes into the break room and He's like, I have an update. And then Oscar says, you push Daryl out the window. Phyllis says, you shot Dwight. I love that they just have those ready to roll. Push Daryl out the window. So ridiculous.
This episode starts, like you said, as like this table setting of Michael's, you know, quote unquote, perfect life. This is what I get to come home to. Jen made me breakfast. Well, she bought the milk. And he describes his life. And then, for the rest of it, Michael's in complete existential chaos. Like, he's really having a hard time.
Can I bring... Okay, one thing I wanted to mention is after Michael's in his office ruminating about this with Dwight, and Michael says, yeah, it's only Meredith, thank God. But did you see the way they looked at me? Like, I was a murderer or something. And then when Dwight proposes all these things that could have happened, why did you do it? Was she talking back? Did she get sick of that face? Did she owe you money?
Uh-oh. She gets sick of that face.
Is this downsizing? Yeah. She spurned your advances. The idea that it could be downsizing.
This is
downsizing, so he's running over employees with his car.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Michael has so many great quotes. I love when he pulls everyone into the conference room to really, like, try to take the, I guess he's trying to take the pressure off of him and make this more of an existential thing. But he's like, you spend your whole life trying to get people to like you, and then you run over one person with your car, and it's not even one of the popular ones, and everybody gets on your case.
So
doesn't make any sense. God is dead.
The way he's speaking, too, he's just kind of looking into the middle distance, and he's just sort of like, everyone's just witnessing his inner monologue.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we all here? This is insane.
Like a giant buffalo or some sort of monster.
The head of a monkey, the antlers of a reindeer on the body. And he really is thinks this is very important.
It's the body of a walrus with the head of a sea lion.
Yeah, that's it.
Which is a sea lion, right?
Or a walrus.
Pretty much. Or something like the body of an egret with the head of a meerkat.
Michael dropping some interesting animals.
Yeah.
I will say, too, that we get some prime Michael Toby moments in this episode. So in this, he opens it up by asking if anyone has, you know, desecrated an Indian burial ground. And Toby asks, no. Like, how? I don't know. Park on it? Toby has to say, no, I did not violate an Indian burial ground. I had to shoot some good luck this week. Alfredo's pizzas pulled my card out of the bowl, so I get a week of free pies. So it's a perfect moment for Toby for Michael to contrast all the suffering and curse that he's going through with a bout of good luck for Toby. And the other thing is, rewatching this episode to prep, I rewatched it a couple times, and I laughed every time when Michael pants his Toby at the starting line. Like, it's just...
yeah. I guess we should also talk about the fun run.
Just
finally, of course, Michael is, you know, ecstatic to learn that Meredith actually has rabies, and so the tiny crack in her pelvis is not nearly as bad as that. And so he organizes the fun run.
The look on Dwight's face when the doctor gives Meredith that news. And it's just been bit by a raccoon and a rat.
Separate occasions.
Yeah, Dwight looks at her with this weird, like, almost in awe of, like, oh my God, woman. Like, how have you done that?
He is responsible for one of those.
He is. And then, but there's, like, two more? He's like, well, obviously I put a bat on your head, but geez. Quit bagging my head.
Don't dog catch me. Like a net, like a giant net. No, Dwight, not like a giant net.
First of all, Michael's all pumped up for this fun run. He gets Dwight to pick him up some, what is it?
Fettuccine Alfredo.
Fettuccine Alfredo, thank you. And because he's heard that you're supposed to carbo load, which is something you do the night before a big race, not minutes before a big race.
And I drink no water out of solidarity with Meredith.
Yes. I do it most nights when I don't have a race the next day. I carbo load almost every night. One of my great shames.
Do you eat it like that too, standing up in the behind your house?
I've eaten Alfredo standing up like
with,
a monster.
With
like
somebody
that,
with quickly. Somebody pouring in the Parmesan cheese as you're eating it.
Nope, I also did that part too. I have totally done that.
But I love the way that the fun run showcases the ensemble at the end of this episode. You know, we get Andy with his nips, Kevin struggling to run in his work clothes, get Creed, Oscar, and Stanley go out to get, they call a taxi to go and get drinks instead, which is like a perfectly planned maneuver too, mm-hmm. where they let Michael run by them and compliment him as he's going. And then
well,
the
Michael,
cat
look at
pulls
you go.
Right up. Yeah.
That's my boss.
Yeah. I'm fast. I'm very fast.
I remember watching Kevin pull up to the finish line in his work clothes made me wonder why they didn't invite Kevin to join them.
Yeah, right?
He was at the starting line with no
action. Yeah, I think he would have had the idea in the first place.
Right.
Although you think that Andy would have followed the car to reduce nipple chafing, running behind the car.
I love when
his run with his arms kind of, he's trying not to move his arms at all is really funny.
Yeah. I love when he bumps into Kevin. And Kevin's like, back off me.
My nipples. I can't even say it. I will say there's that moment where Dwight says he put Imodium in Toby's coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Uh-huh. But then Toby is running in the middle of the street when they're filming him. Everybody else is on the sidewalk, and Toby's just running down the middle of the road. Normally, I'd have to stop to go to the bathroom, but I feel great.
Yeah, dude, he feels great. He's like, I'm taking up the road, baby.
Mm-hmm. And he wins.
He does.
He wins. And, you know, greeted
Kelly
by Kelly.
Yeah.
At the end, they couldn't have made it a circle.
Yeah. Where are we? I don't know, like 5K from the office.
I love that we also get Jan working, you know, I mean, the episode with her like passed out on the bed and Michael kind of revealing that she's just kind of been hanging out. So I think maybe Jan is excited to have something to do, something to come out and see everybody and support her, her man.
It is mostly their money that makes up the donation.
That's right. And she challenges Pam at the start. I almost forgot. She walks in on Michael.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we get a little Michael Wiener sighting in this episode, which she later references during the roast.
Mm-hmm. If it was an iPod, it would be a shuffle.
The sight of his, and then Jim says baguette, and then Pam says dangling participle.
Oh, dangling participle would be a good trivia team name.
What?
What are some of your other favorite?
I can't even go near a cigarette now without thinking of a penis, and vice versa.
That was the only Michael penis drop I can see. Oh, here we go.
The only thing I am worried about is getting a boner.
There we go.
You don't know me. You've just seen my penis.
That's a great line. I had that drop somewhere, and I couldn't find it. I must have...
You dropped it.
I dropped it. Yeah, got lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm. In the iPod shuffle. I'll stop. I'll take my answer off the air.
No, I appreciate that. I really do.
And that's really our episode. Yeah. What are some of your guys' favorite moments from this episode, or stuff we didn't get to, talk about yet?
Well, I think the ending just of Michael kind of getting a little bit of the closure he was looking for with Meredith at least.
Mm, and they share the sucker.
Yeah, an ending.
Hey, man.
Show with like when this episode starts and he hits Meredith, it's just funny to think it's going to end with Michael in the same hospital room in a hospital bed next to Meredith. It's just it's a good structure. I really enjoyed that part of it.
I got a couple. So in this episode, we get a couple instances of where the characters kind of get stacked vertically in frame with one another, and I love those moments. It's a different way to frame the show. The first one is when Jim is describing how Karen came back from New York and talked about how she, just because they were broken up, didn't mean that she was going anywhere. And you see, visually, you see them like talking or arguing in the kitchen. And then the camera pulls back and you see, I think it's Angela, Phyllis, Stanley, and Dwight all kind of reacting. They're like, they can overhear this conversation. Angela's about to go in the kitchen and stops, but they're almost stacked diagonally in frame. And it's just such an interesting sort of shot. And to think that all these moments that we see in the kitchen, everyone in the bullpen can kind of hear what's going on, just adds to the... Since when is this an office where we get in everyone's personal business, as Michael says later on? The other instance of that is when they all go to see Meredith at the same time. And they all are just stacked up. And Kevin goes in for that fist bump over the shoulder. Like, just when you stack everyone up like that and have them react together, I always love those moments. Oh, and then one last thing. Another insight from the Andy Green book was that the depiction of corporate Ryan is loosely, or maybe not so loosely, modeled after Ben Silverman, who was an exec who helped kind of get The Office picked up and on air, but was made co-chair of NBC programming or NBC comedy. Oh. And they kind of replicated his stubble beard and his tighter fitting suit. And like the writers kind of hinted at it, but I guess now they kind of openly admit that they're just kind of poking fun at him. And then it also includes that Devin Banks from 30 Rock, played by Will Arnett, similarly is supposed to kind of portray Ben Silverman in that capacity.
That's incredible.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Poor Ben Silverman.
Yeah. Couple notes. One, we find out Creed is 82 in this episode, or is about to be 82.
That's right.
You're over 75 years old.
75 plus division. It's 82 this November.
Is he lying? I mean, he's got multiple identities.
Sometimes a bro's got to ride the bull. Know what I mean? Later, skater.
I like to believe Creed is 82 for the show.
You, me, line. Sammy, the other guy, the chick you hit with your car.
Tall guy walked in with a sock full of nickels.
Yeah.
I think another great line is Dwight pleading with Angela when they're having their fight, and he says, "Or we can have her buried out in the East Field by mother." Just love that line. And then, of course, what we didn't talk about either is Michael knowing the quote-unquote nurse. Hey, I know you, Elizabeth.
Oh, Elizabeth, yeah.
Yeah.
And that they've taken their $700 and they've whittled it down to $340 made out to science. Make sure that gets into the right hands, and they just hand her that shit.
Yeah.
I was thinking, too, how much they must have spent. They spent, you know, they spent money to make up the big check, but I wonder if they also had to take money to make up that big picture of Meredith that they display right. as the face of rabies.
I know. Maybe they use the same printer for the Jan Sun Princess poster as well.
And all the t-shirts.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, one thing I haven't noticed in this episode, sorry to keep adding on things at the end, but
how dare you?
Yeah.
Go ahead. One
last
time.
That's not what the show is about, extra office tea, nerding out about The Office. There's a flyer that we get to see that they have made up, 5,000 miles. And I mean, I've watched this show, you know, we've watched this show so many times, and I feel like I have a tendency to kind of, not tune out, but like you watch it in the background, like you don't pick up on all the little details all the time if you're not paying attention. But the flyer is so funny. It has little clip arts in the corners. It says free t-shirt. You may not get one. I don't know. I love the little details there. And then Phyllis's rabies quilt. Look at that. Three.
How about Daryl feeding the squirrel while Michael's giving his talk? Take a look into the face of rabies. That should scare you. It scares me. Kate Flannery, man, what a champ. She goes along with so much in this show and just says, "Yeah, I'll do it," and it's awesome.
I can't wait for the Meredith episode.
Me too. It's coming soon.
I can't wait for us to keep talking about how we're going to do it.
Yeah,
and then do Gabe.
It's kind of a will they, won't they? Will they talk about Meredith? Will they not talk about Meredith this week?
Maybe I don't know if we said it already. I mean, one of my favorite quotes, Creed. I've been involved in a number of cults, both as a leader and a follower. There it
you
is.
Have more fun as a follower. But you make you more fun as a leader.
That's true. That's very true.
Shout out to Keith Raniere.
Yeah, man, I've been watching that. Vow on HBO. Vow, yeah. If you're into that,
I mean, not a shout out, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
Making money as a leader.
Yeah, screw that guy. All right, let's move on to conference room. 5 minutes.
That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds.
All right. This week, we're doing a mini draft. We've done drafts on the show before. And this week, we're doing single episode characters. So we've all thought.
People always want us to do more drafts. And it's well, we're basing it off All Fantasy Everything. Shout out to their podcast.
Shout out to
Go
all
check them out for their intellectual property.
That's a very fun show.
On this structure. But people, we'll do more. People want us to do more.
It's always fun,
man. It's a fun way to chop up the show.
Mm-hmm. Fun one. Season 4, episode 1.
Christ almighty.
All right. I am going to pick randomly between you. I'm going to eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Edwin, you go first.
Okay. What is the order? Are we doing a snake draft? Yeah?
So, yeah. Let's do a...
What is that?
So if you pick first in the first round, you pick third in the second round.
Sounds good. Okay.
And we're each picking three.
We're each picking three.
Alex can have the hot corner.
Okay, so with the number one overall pick in the draft, I'm going to take the liquor store guy from Christmas Party.
Yeah, I was like, that's Sean's first pick for sure, dude.
Damn. There
and it goes. Not a one scene character, not even a one episode character, one scene.
15 bottles of vodka. That'll do it.
Wait,
cool, box it up.
I'll write down the the picks here. Ugh.
All right.
Sean, you're next, and then me. Yeah, okay, let's go.
Oh man, now I don't. I'm gonna take.
This is what it felt like when you drafted money right before.
yeah. Well, I'm gonna take Christian, played by Tim Meadows.
Nice pick.
In The Client.
Good. Very good pick.
That was.
Hey, you slit your wrists. You said, "This is my blood." Hey, world.
This is my blood.
It's red like yours. So love me.
That's amazing. A fantastic.
That's funny.
I got awesome blossom coming out my nose.
I would have liked to see him come back.
Me too. That's kind of how I thought about this. I would like to see again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know
totally.
I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. All right, Alex.
Leads me to my first pick. So glad I have the hot corner. I can lock up my two favorites here. First pick for me is Uncle Al. I love Uncle Al.
Even the doctors didn't.
The Celtics were a great team.
Yeah, Robert Parrish.
No one
yeah.
helped me. I had to do it myself.
I got a dinner roll in his pocket.
That's a good one.
He's got dinner rolls. I don't know. There's just something about him that really makes me laugh. And I could do with maybe... Yeah. Maybe one more Uncle Al.
Keep it together, man.
Yeah. I wish he should have showed up at the garden party or something.
Yeah, that would have been great.
My number two pick is the Pizza by Alfredo delivery boy.
Oh, yeah.
He just comes in, brings some great energy.
Kevin McHale is the name of the actor, is it not?
Is it really?
I thought so.
For the big reason that I would have liked to see him again down the road, like him and Michael cross paths and just been like, oh my God, like maybe he's in a different job. He's working something else. He's working at Staples next to Dwight. I don't know, but he would, I just like how much he doesn't care about Michael. He knows Dwight. He's the farmer that grows the shitty weed.
Yeah.
I just like his relationships to Dwight and Michael. He's really funny and he really holds up a lot of that episode he's in Launch Party.
Good picks. Great picks. I am going to go with, I'm going to go with Chad Light, played by Anthony Russell in Product Recall. He
Chad
is the lighter side.
And Obits.
Yeah. That's right. Don't forget.
Did you get all that? Everything.
Every word.
There's that deleted scene where he says, "Aren't you Creed Bratton from the Grassroots?" Yeah. I wrote your obituary.
Oh, I forgot to talk about, real quick, I forgot to talk about the deleted scene where they're talking about religion. Mm-hmm. And Oscar says he's a secular humanist.
Oh.
And Michael's like, "Oh, great. We got a secular humanist here." And Oscar's like, "Do you even know what that means?" And Michael just nails the definition.
Yeah.
And the look on Oscar's face.
He's so confused.
I understand why they cut it, but it's such a funny, funny thing. And just, I don't know. Anyway, that was a moment, deleted scene I like.
All right, Edwin.
Concierge Marie.
Yeah,
nice.
She was up next for me.
Very good.
Ooh, technically still a hot
that's
corner.
Good.
Yeah, the husband, that's good.
Yeah, you Edwin, get another you one.
Well, I'll take the
last pick.
Yeah. I'll take the inspiration for this draft, who we did not talk about in the episode discussion, which is the male intern.
He actually gave him a joke.
He looks at he's the only character who seems to like relish the presence of a camera and use it as a moment to make a joke. And admittedly in poor taste. So that's where her uterus went.
Yeah.
Her chart doesn't indicate that Dwight read her chart and uses it as an opportunity to talk about how she got time off for a full hysterectomy.
I know. Well, you're right that more strangers would probably be like, oh, camera, I want to be on TV. Outside of like the girl in line with Andy at the reality show later on.
Yeah, that was an honorable mention pick for me.
Oh, sorry. I'm naming names.
No worries. You guys can pick it if you want. Okay. I don't know if you will.
It's not okay. It's time for Sean's third pick.
I'm going to go with Ben Franklin, a.k.a. Gordon, played by Andy Daly from the episode Ben Franklin. I love Andy Daly. I love...
Didn't Ben Franklin have syphilis? Yes, he did.
But I don't. Why, the tyrant King George, of course.
Chocolate.
Where did you acquire it?
What's his TV show? What's it called?
Review.
Yeah, that's a great show. I've watched all of that, and I almost forget sometimes about it. But
it's so good, man.
It is wild.
That is up there with like Nathan For You and Comedy Central shows that are better. They're just better than any other show they've done.
Yeah,
so good.
And I don't think many people know about it, so check it out. All right, Alex.
This is a tough choice. Luckily, I'll just get to name my honorable mentions right after, so it's not a huge deal. But I'm going to take Frank Regan of Frank Regan's Funeral Home. Not only a one episode character, not just a one scene character, a one shot character, single shot. And boy, oh boy, does he deliver with that one.
Nails
shot.
It. Oh,
Frank Regan Funeral Home. Too much for Maldehyde.
That moment just makes me laugh so much. So, I had to take him.
I don't want to blow up your spot, but I think he appears in another moment in the show. Granted, it's a different capacity. There is a thing where Dwight holds up a picture of like his grandparents, and like the guy is sitting in the chair, and they think it's the same actor.
Oh my God.
Whoa. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah. I don't think it should. He's.
No, that counts.
I can look it up if you want. I'm pretty sure it's been like, it's one of those things that get shared around in fan groups or online.
Well, you know what? How about this? I'll start the honorable mentions, and my first one will be the replacement.
Perfect,
pick,
yeah.
For Frank Regan, if I can't take him, which is Jim and Pam's delivery nurse.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because that actress,
you know everything.
Oh, good. She is so good. And I think she brings a lot to that episode. She's great. Yeah. And I think we've mainly. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Never mind. That's it.
I had Nana Scott.
Great one.
Played by Connie Sawyer in the episode Dream Team. Mm-hmm. Would have loved to see more of her and her two cohorts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The investment club.
Yeah.
Yep.
We could give him a chance. It's not much money.
My two honorable mentions that I have were Casey Dean, played by Jessica St. Clair.
Yes.
Doctor, who's that? Doctor, give me the news. When she's in the line with me for the a cappella contest.
Right.
And then KCD. And then the last one I had, this is a super random one, but in Test the Store in season 8, Dwight introduces the blogger as Fatty Gruesome. Oh, yeah. She says, my name is Patty Grossman.
Shelby Thomas Weems was on my list.
Oh, nice.
That's great. It's so good.
Director of the Andy's play. yeah. He would have been fun to have, you know, run into Michael at some other point as well. Shelby, although it was pretty late. But Michael was almost out of the show by the time you met him. Hmm. And of course, Grotty as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about the leader of the Knights of the Night, who's just so dismissive of Dwight's objections? It's all right, Dwight. Let your friend grab his phone or whatever.
Yeah.
He's great too. And the flashlight tag moment is so heartwarming. It was pretty fun. Shine the light at each other. Flashlight tag. That sounds like fun.
All right. Well, Alex, you want to read back our picks, and then we'll move on to some trivia.
Sure. Edwin drafted first. He took the liquor guy from the Christmas episode. Concierge cool, Marie.
Box it up.
Cool, cool. Concierge Marie and the male intern from this very episode. Mm-hmm. Sean, you drafted second. You took Christian from the mm-hmm. client. You took Chad Lai, Lighter Side of Life, and you took Ben Franklin, the syphilitic Ben Franklin. I drafted third. I took Uncle Al, the Pizza by Alfredo delivery boy, and Frank Regan of Frank Regan's funeral home, who was disqualified and replaced with Jim and Pam's delivery nurse.
Nice. Here well, we well done, boys. Good picks all around. Let's move on to some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
This week's trivia. Hey, Alex, Sean, and Edwin. I'm Harrison from San Diego, and I'm 13 years old.
Hey, Harrison. I'm Alex. I'm 32.
Let's be friends. I just want to say that this is one of my favorite podcasts, and I listen to it almost every day. Thanks, Harrison.
That's amazing.
Here's some fairly difficult trivia for you guys, provided by Harrison. Question one. In The Deposition, Season 4, Episode 8, how many copies did they make of Michael's diary?
In The Deposition, 4?
No, they make like a dozen.
11 copies. 11. Oh. One extra for Toby.
We'll say one extra for a dozen. Yeah. Come on.
Question 2. In The Cold Open to Costume Contest, Season 7, Episode 6, what percent is the branch on Jupiter? On Jupiter up.
Our branch on Jupiter is up.
It's like 5,000%.
Yeah, something like that. 200%.
8,000%.
8,000%.
In Saber, Season 6, Episode 15, how many tiny cups of water does Gabe think can fit in the Saber aluminum bottle?
Like 20 or 25.
Well, Michael goes through like 20 a day, right?
Yeah.
20 cups. Yeah, Gabe says okay. 20 cups.
20 cups,
20 cups can fit in this bottle. Okay, sure.
Yeah. In Basketball, Season 1, Episode 5, name all 11 people that played in the game. So there's the sales team and the warehouse team.
Okay, let's do Dunder Mifflin, or let's do sales first. So Michael, okay. Dwight, Stanley, Ryan,
Jim.
And there's one more.
Phyllis?
Yeah, yes. Phyllis. Yeah. And then... Daryl, Lonnie, Roy, Madge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, Dwight checks up Madge. That's right.
Then there's the older guy. I don't know his name. I can't think of his name.
Yeah.
His name is Jerry.
Jerry.
Jerry. Cool.
Jerry.
But was that the last one? Okay.
That's the last one. Very good.
Jerry.
In Roy's Wedding, Season 9, Episode 2, what food did Roy want at his wedding?
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs, correct. In Pilot, Season 1, Episode 1, how many years had Pam and Roy been engaged?
3.
Yes, correct.
Nice.
In Gettysburg, Season 8, Episode 8, what does it say on the hat that the office members are wearing?
Oh, DM does GB.
DM correct. Does GB. I want that hat.
In Business School, Season 3, Episode 16, what candy bars... did Michael throw into the stands? There are 4.
100 grand, payday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the two.
I know.
Snickers?
Yes. That's when he says satisfied.
Yeah, satisfied. Mini Mounds bars is later.
Yeah.
That's what Pam throws out. And now it's...
To try to think of how it starts. How does he start this? Little speech.
What's it? Oh, whatchamacallit.
That's it. Thank you. All right. In Chair Model, Season 4, Episode 10, in the catalog, what page was the chair model on?
26.
85.
Okay.
See, some of the number the number questions are just not interesting.
And not easy.
Okay.
Not easy either.
In Murder, Season 6, Episode 10, what was one of the battles that Jim picked as co-manager?
Oh, Tube City.
Tube City. Fun fact, the name of our Wi-Fi network at our house.
that's a good one.
And the internet's a series of tubes, man. In Training Day, Season 7, Episode 20, how did D'Angelo want Aaron to answer the phone?
Dunder Mifflin. Or this Dunder is. Mifflin, this is.
Dunder Mifflin, how may I assist you?
There you go.
In Conflict Resolution, Season 2, Episode 21, can you name all 7 pranks that Jim pulled on Dwight in Conflict Resolution?
Okay, knock myself in the head with the phone.
Yes, by putting nickels in the handset.
Everyone has been calling me Dwayne all day.
Yes.
Someone replaced $5. My pens and pencils with crayons.
Correct.
Everyone has been calling me Dwayne all day. Did I already say that?
You said that one.
Okay. I found a bloody glove in my drawer, and Jim Halpert tried to convince me I committed murder.
Yes.
There are 2 more?
There are 3 more. You're doing great.
I'm trying to think of what the other ones are.
I'll give you one that I would have forgotten about. Told him that there was an abandoned infant in the women's room, and when he went
when
in there,
it was
to
Meredith
save it,
on the can.
He saw Meredith on the can.
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
All right, you want the last two?
Sure.
Every time he typed his name, it said diapers.
Diapers. Yeah.
And by the end of the day, the desk was about 2 feet closer to the copier.
Ah. Okay.
Okay. Only 3 more questions. In Prince Family Paper, Season 5, Episode 13, which people thought Hilary Swank was hot and which people didn't think Hilary Swank was hot?
So it's 5 to 5. That's not right. But or that's what Kevin says. Thank you, accounting department.
Right.
So you want to do hot or not hot first? What do you think?
Let's do hot.
Okay. Jim, Pam.
Yep.
Kelly.
Yep.
Hilary Swank is not hot. Means I'm not hot.
Phyllis?
No.
Stanley, for sure.
Stanley, yes.
Michael?
Yes.
There's one more.
There's one more besides.
Oscar?
We've got Creed and Angela.
Creed and Angela, okay.
Yeah, but
oh,
not
yeah, she's
hot.
Hot as heck. Yeah.
Yeah. But not hot.
Oscar?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin?
He is not hot. Yeah.
Toby.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in the office? Andy.
Yes.
Yeah, who else is in the cast?
Devin. Yeah. Phyllis and Meredith.
Okay.
Okay. Question 14. Name all 4 people that had a crush on Jim, and name the season it was shown.
Okay. So
like Pam in season 1 and 2?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Okay.
That's the first.
Okay.
Karen?
Yep.
Okay. Season Michael?
Kathy in season 8?
Yeah.
This is Katie in season 1?
Yeah, Katie.
This I don't know about this, Harrison. He's got Jordan from season 7. But
incorrect.
I don't
incorrect.
I don't know
Katie, it's Katie from season 1.
Yeah, he's got Jordan
Garfield.
Yeah. So, anyways, Harrison, maybe there's a deleted scene or something. We don't know. But if you could back that one up. All right, final question. Here.
I think I don't mean to stop. We should cut that question. I think because there might be like a little moment or something that we're not thinking of. I don't know. I just think it's kind of a weird question, and I don't know.
Yeah. Just if you want, it's just go, okay, last question, and I can cut it to there if we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. Name all 4 people that had a crush on Pam and name the season it was shown.
Oh. Okay.
Roy, when they're engaged. Jim in season 1.
How about Toby for 9 seasons?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Ryan,
yeah, Roy,
in season
Toby.
4?
Yep, uh-huh.
Who do we have?
And Jim.
Okay, yes.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much, Harrison.
Yes.
Awesome trivia, man. Really appreciate you sending that in. And to our listeners, you can send us trivia. Email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a message, 503-694-9314. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com, and you can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott, $5 a month. You can become a Scott's Tot. Every month, there's a special mailbag episode where we answer every Patreon question. You help support the show, and we donate a portion of the funds to a charity. I think we're still doing
Thurgood Marshall College Fund. Yeah.
Yep. Fulfilling Michael Scott's dream to send kids to college. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs our artwork. And this was recorded in Portland, Oregon, over video chat.
I miss recording with you guys. I wish we could do it in person soon. Maybe
it's been months.
Maybe we'll figure out a safe way to do it soon.
Yeah, someday soon.
Yep.
Thank you, as always, for listening. We appreciate absolutely every single one of you. Let us, thank you for spending time with us. Let us know if you want to interact, send us a message, send us a question, anything. We're always happy to hear from you. But take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the zobbity.
Yes, sir.
This is going to be a very good year. Very good. Jan is at home, Jim is back, my protege Ryan is at corporate, good stuff. Andy and Dwight are rocking the sales team. I feel very blessed.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.